and foremost, we need a labor movement that's politically independent from the Democratic Party.
In order for us to move forward in how we practice our work as organizers and build our movement is that we have to continue building camaraderie.
Notes from the Left Forum, A Vision Moving Forward, was the topic of a plenary at the conference held in June at John Jay College in New York City. It looked at what a unified left in the States could look like. In this program, we hear community organizers Bera V. Desai, the founding member of the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, and Kathy Dang, executive director of CAV, Organizing Asian Communities. Dang is first up. She's originally from Ridgewood, Queens, a daughter of Chinese-Vietnamese refugee parents who raised her in their nail salon in downtown Brooklyn. She's been a community and worker center organizer for over a decade with restaurant and retail workers fighting for racial, gender, and economic justice. Dang was recently on a U.S. women's delegation to Vietnam, hosted by the Vietnam Women's Union. Kathy Dang.
And the Vietnam Women's Union just got to see the work from the very national scale to the city, to the very communal level. And it's incredible, incredible organizing. And I had so many reflections, and I also had to tell myself when I came back to not romanticize everything that I'm sitting with and be disappointed with U.S.-based organizing. So I just had to keep reminding myself that. And also that we live in different contexts, we live in different conditions here in the U.S. And the conditions also is the folks that we organize here in the U.S., we come from different histories. We come from different migration and forced migration histories. And so it's a much different experience and challenges around organizing towards alignment, and still very necessary. But I wanted to talk more about the how pieces of how connecting to the bigger picture. And so as we are watching like the work of Jackson Rising and even work in Oakland, California around just transitions and San Francisco Rising, and even in New York City, we don't actually give ourselves enough credit around the public dollars that we've moved to support community land trusts and worker-owned cooperatives and investing in that. Those are shifts. It has to be coordinated shifts. These are shifts that we also have to celebrate. And that has to go in conjunction with how we build alignment and how we organize. So there are three areas that I learned coming back from Vietnam and connecting to grassroots organizing here. One is, yes, we have to be politically aligned. I was so impressed by the very like communal level to the national level, how people were just so aligned, using words like building the capacity of our people. Like over here in the U.S., we're talking about how we don't have capacity. Over there, it's like we're continuing to build capacity of our people. And they're just politically aligned across the board of how they talk about the revolution in Vietnam. And then the second piece is how we actually build alignment and how we build up organizers and build infrastructure and structure to our work. So at the very local and national level, how are we building structure to how we organize? Some clear examples in the Asian communities, there's something called Seeding Change. It's a national organization where they're training up organizers and in the same way in terms of how they do outreach and how they talk to people and how we're building people into the organizations, how we're doing politics, and how we're not afraid. I think I get so frustrated sometimes that some folks are so afraid to push politics and use the word socialism, and to push hard politics and challenge anti-blackness within our own communities, or homophobia. And we can't be afraid, because liberation requires us to be more brave. So that's the second piece. And I think the third thing is how we develop organizers has to be on the same level. How one organization develops organizers, we should try to get on the same page with other organizations, how we're developing organizers. That's how we get to the question of scale. I know for smaller organizations, we're challenged with scale often. But if we work with alliances, that's how we actually can talk and think about scale on a larger level. The other thing I wanted to touch on was how we build ecosystems in our work. So CAV are a very small organization, but we're part of alliances, and there's much bigger organizations like Chinese Progressive Association San Francisco in California who've really taken on the role to help build infrastructure and an ecosystem in our communities. So they're a much larger organization who will throw down for small organizations to build ourselves up to build infrastructure. And so if we want to talk about building a movement, we actually have to talk about an ecosystem in our organizations and how we're building across. And we have to contribute. So if we get to that point and we're able to help build that ecosystem, we have the responsibility to be building that ecosystem if we get to that point of being able to have that infrastructure. And something that I've been seeing lately is this whole rift and rife between old guard versus new guard. And I was talking to a lot of folks about this, like, ah, these new people and these new young people, they're just sitting in their feelings all day long, and they just, which I get, they sit in their feelings all day long, and they just critique with no solution. You know, instant gratification and purism and perfectionism, short-term outlook. Yes, I get all of that, and it's frustrating. And there's also the old guard ways of burning yourself down to the ground, writing off young people and their experiences, which are also equally important to how we understand the conditions of now, living in scarcity and living in purely thoughts in the mind of analysis and not connecting back to feelings. And the reality is we actually need both. We need to be in touch with what we're feeling but lead with what we're thinking, and combining both. When we met with the party in Vietnam, they often would use the word cooperation and struggle. They don't always get along with China, but, and there's a struggle over the South Sea, or the East Sea, there's debates on what the name of the sea is, but they kept emphasizing cooperation and struggle. So how do we adopt and continue to work through these challenges and cooperate and struggle with one another? And we have to think of new ways of moving forward, and have perspective. And there are many lessons learned in history. Lessons that I am actually going to start, I'm actually transitioning out of CAV, and I'm going to start actually raising some of these things. CAV is has a long history. It's become a kind of an institution. And we've also made many mistakes as an organization. And what we learned from the party in Vietnam was about candor, and how candor actually moves us towards progress, and how we talk openly about our mistakes and our movements, not to air us out or call each other out, but talk about candor and to move us forward. So how do we F up in all these different ways as an organization and decisions that we made to get to where we are today? Candor towards progress. And the last thing I want to touch on is perspective and camaraderie. So perspective, I'll get to camaraderie, but perspective, the first thing is, what I'm often seeing in our work is that some folks might feel like they're too good to do this work. We get to a certain point of this work, but the revolution requires plumbing. Trust me on that. Like, I went to Vietnam, you have a choice between a hole and a toilet, you prefer the toilet. But, you know, we're never too good to be doing the hard, laborious work of our ancestors and our parents. You know, my parents came from Vietnam. My family's been in Vietnam for 100 years and lived through, you know, almost a century of struggle in Vietnam. And so, then we came, and there were nail salon workers, and I grew up in the nail salon, you know, touch acetone, did many pedicures my whole life up until I was 22. And you know, acrylics are just, you know, and I think there's also, you know, OSHA violations and health-related issues that, we, of course, is being fixed. But as organizers in this work and as people are coming into this movement, we're never too good to do the laborious work that's required of us. We're never too good to pick up the garbage or clean and, you know, mop up, the flood in the bathroom. We're never too good for that. And the last thing is camaraderie. So when I came back from Vietnam, there was a flood in my office because there was this blizzard and it was freezing in New York and our pipes froze and I was so frustrated. And our ceiling collapsed, there was mold along the wall, and you know, I as the ED of a small organization had to deal with all of that. And I was there like by myself ripping up the floors. I'm like so miserable, just like ripping up the floors. I'm like, why am I doing this by myself? Because I just like wanted the staff to focus on the work. And I was so miserable, but I was thinking back, I went to the Coochie tunnels where the Viet Cong lived in these tunnels for like years on end. And like, how did they like live through these tunnels and get like blown out and like watered in and for years? And I can't even, you know, be in this office by myself dealing with the dust and the mold and ripping out floors. I had to remind myself that there are 5,000 people living in those tunnels together. And there is camaraderie that they had and built with one another. And in order for us to move forward and how we practice our work as organizers and build our movement is that we have to continue building camaraderie. And, you know, there is really clear examples in the last couple of years. You know, I started off this work when there was 1 million people marching in LA against SB 1070 over 10 years ago. Or even the police brutality work in New York City and across the country, the marches that we're seeing, that level of camaraderie that we have to keep and maintain in order to believe moving forward. The last thing is, if we want to move our work forward and stay focused and keep ourselves in it, we have to have fun. I think people forget however you define fun, whatever fun is to you. But fun is actually important and to keep us leveled for imagination, for love and hope, and community with other people.
Kathy Dang of CAV, Organizing Asian Communities. And you're listening to Notes from the Left Forum, a plenary on a vision moving forward, what a unified left could look like. Up next is Bera V. Desai, a founding member of the New York Taxi Workers Alliance. It's a union representing approximately 15,000 taxi drivers in New York City. She begins by reminding the audience that the New York Taxi Workers Alliance is the organization which on January of 2017 held a strike at the JFK taxi lot in opposition to the Muslim ban. Here's Bera V. Desai.
Yeah. It was an amazing moment for us. We had no idea that the world was watching. We're out there protesting. We got back home at like 1, 2, 3 in the morning and realized that Delete Uber was trending nationally because while our members were out on strike, of course, you know, Uber dropped its rates to encourage people to go out to the airport. But, you know, one backstory to that strike for us is it was only possible because it wasn't our first one, right? We'd had many strikes at the airport before. And the reason we went out on strike at the airport taxi lot that day, when we saw the protesters gathering at the terminal, we knew that we needed to do something to give support to the protesters. And we believe that if we shut down the airport lot, that the police forces of the Port Authority would be completely divided. And we knew that because just about 5-6 months prior to the strike on that day, we had also shut down Kennedy Airport. I mean, there was no media, there were no cameras there at the time. But we had actually shut down Kennedy Airport, the taxi lines, because one of our members, we were getting ready for a demonstration the next day in front of the governor's office. And one of our members who was leafleting to fellow drivers and in the middle of his shift while his taxi was parked in the lot, was assaulted by a group of dispatchers. And then the cops came in and went to arrest him. And so, we shut down the lot. We had dozens of our members. And it's a huge lot that holds up to 700 taxis at one time. So there's hundreds of drivers there. And, you know, many of our members sat on the ground and wouldn't let any of the taxis out. And within minutes, right, Port Authority had the entire lot surrounded by tow trucks, and there were dogs, and there were, you know, cops in riot gear. And, you know, it was just us to defend ourselves in that moment. And so we knew that if we were to shut it down again, that the police would not know how to respond to us and respond to the protesters at the terminal at the same time. And, I have to say, in all our years of organizing, I mean, that moment, when I think about what should the labor movement look like in our country, I can't help but to feel like in that moment, the courage and the vision of our members that shut down that lot really answered that question for me in such a profound way. After the Arab Spring, right, unions across the Arab world had this like amazing rise in membership. Right? Like there were unions talking about how they couldn't keep up with the number of folks that wanted to sign. And that's because for folks in the Arab world, they could connect those movements, you know, the democracy and liberation movements could be directly connected to the role that unions had played in civil society in really difficult times, but also the role that they had played, you know, at the time of the Arab Spring itself. But in the U.S., we don't have that kind of an analogy. I mean, you would have, you know, during the Occupy movement, for example, many folks would have thought that we would have seen a rise in union membership, right? First of all, it would be hard to see those numbers because, you know, as Kali was saying, too much of the union movement is dependent on the National Labor Relations Board telling us whether or not we have members. That the members only get counted once you're able, you know, to win a contract or, you know, to win an election. But really, not even then. It's really when you're able to win the contract. In other words, when the bosses have been forced to come to the table to recognize you. But that's not what should give you recognition. What makes a union is, you know, it's an organization that's democratically organized and represented by the workers who have come together to defend themselves. And that could be outside of the NLRB, as we've been doing for 22 years, or even if it's within the recognition of the NLRB. And I don't want to downplay how important collective bargaining is and how important that recognition needs to be, not for the sake of the union, but for the sake of maintaining our civil society and even, you know, the illusions of democracy. But even when you have that recognition, if the workers aren't the ones that are controlling their organization and their destiny, you know, and their rights within that local economy and that industry, that's not a union. That's a collective bargaining agent. And I would argue that they really are two different things. You know, union to me, you know, it's the more political, it's the more ideological definition of what it means for workers to come together and fight for their own self-determination. So, you know, at the end of the Occupy movement or throughout the Occupy movement, we couldn't count all these numbers because we don't have a union, an organized union movement that understands that we need to find new ways of calculating our membership and understanding the level of support, you know, grassroots worker support that we as workers' organizations have. But we also couldn't calculate those numbers because the reality is there was a large disconnect between, you know, a grassroots movement by activists, by, you know, primarily young activists, right, and organized labor. Organized labor was not at the heart of that movement. Or there were many organizations, many labor unions that I think did great work in supporting Occupy, but of course, we as a labor movement have absolutely no claim in saying that we were at the heart of why Occupy happened. Similarly, when you look at the Black Lives Matter movement, if any, which I think is probably the most important grassroots movement, certainly in my generation, you know, you don't see a connect. Yeah. We still don't see that connect, right? That translates into either a membership that broadens out the labor movement or even a more of an ideological shift within the labor movement itself that has got to recognize that racism and capitalism are two sides of the same coin. And unless we as a left, you know, are push ourselves to have those conversations that recognizes the ways in which racism is so deeply entrenched in our society and in our economy, we will fail to rebuild our society. And of course, for me, when I think of those two sides of that coin, the name of that coin is imperialism. And yet, you know, we have a labor movement that doesn't challenge itself on these larger social ideological questions. Instead, we're too busy being bureaucrats and technocrats, right? Which is even when we look at the split between the AFL and Change to Win all those years ago was about. It was an internal power play. It was not an ideological shift, which is really what we need in the labor movement. First and foremost, we need a labor movement that's politically independent from the Democratic Party. As a movement, right, you know, as an institution right now, we end up really being a lapdog to that party, a party that in so many ways has sold its soul to Wall Street, you know, and I mean, there's an important internal struggle that's going on within the party that we in the left have to push, right? Because what if we don't push for that, if we don't push for those internal debates, then the party is only going to move even further to the right. And so I think it's important that we have that. But I also think it's important that unless the labor movement is seen as its own independent political vehicle, it will always get used by the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party will have absolutely no reason to genuinely distance itself from Wall Street and all the titans of capital. The labor movement has such an, it's not only a necessity that the Democratic Party distance itself from Wall Street, but really the labor movement can be the catalyst to make that happen. We still are the most organized force of people in this society. The labor movement has tremendous power. The problem is that it has been for far too long a tool of capital rather than being a vehicle of change, particularly for the working class. And I know that so well just from the day-to-day grassroots that we do, you know, work that we do in our industry. I mean, where companies like Uber, which represent less than 1% of the economy, but in more than half the states across the country, they have one deregulation bill where if you are a worker and the boss is an app company, you can no longer be considered an employee. And these are not all Republican-dominated states by any stretch of the imagination. And so, in order to rebuild the labor movement in this country, obviously, you know, there's no doubt that means it has to be a labor movement that is based on class-conscious unionism and not on business unionism. And so that means that we need that left, you know, that those of us who come from the left and are part of the labor movement, we have to find more ways of engaging the movement that we are a part of. And we need a left that supports that effort. We cannot have a left in this country that is either confused around issues of imperialism or is really blind to the significance and the role of labor. And there are too many left spaces where that does happen. Just because it's an institution itself that is deeply problematic, you know, and flawed, it does not mean that the labor movement as a whole is something that we should take for granted. The left needs to find ways to inject new organizing and you know, have more young activists join the labor movement. You know, we need to take that movement over because it's still the biggest vehicle of change that we have within this economy and, you know, really within our society. And I think when the disconnect happens from the Democratic Party, you'll also see a labor movement that begins to invest more in organizing, in grassroots organizing, and not so much, you know, in the top-down business unionism that you see of today. And just really, very lastly, I just want to say that it's true that when we think of the labor movement, you know, we often focus on, you know, the large institutions, the big unions and the federation. I happen to be a board, you know, an executive committee member of the AFL-CIO. We were the first non-traditional union that was chartered actually by the AFL-CIO for membership. But really, I think what we have to focus on is a broader working class movement that also looks at, you know, grassroots organizing like by worker centers, which are doing some of the most confrontational, anti-capitalist, you know, militant organizing that's out there. And they are part of the reason. And, you know, that organizing is part of the reason that you see a pressure on local unions, maybe not at the national level, but on local unions, to become more militant and class conscious and to be more democratically organized, you know, at the local level. And so we need to also support more work by worker centers and push worker centers to be more membership driven and to be more mass-based driven, because, you know, we can't have a disconnect where the largest mass-based organizations in our country are so depoliticized, which is just a fancy way of saying that they're ideologically centered on the right. While we have, you know, the more militant grassroots organizing remain too small in numbers. We need a large mass-based movement in order to create real change, you know, given the forces that we're up against. And I think the left has a real role to play to be a bridge between, you know, these two factions of the larger workers' movement in this country.
And you've been listening to Notes from the Left Forum. This program was produced from a plenary at the Left Forum called A Vision Moving Forward. You heard Kathy Dang with CAV and Bayravi Desai with the New York Taxi Workers Alliance. This program was produced for WBAI New York and Pacifica Radio by Linda Perry with thanks to the Left Forum. The conference was held in June in New York City at John Jay College. And thank you for listening.